Welcome back to Tenure, a game menu, where we break down how you get tenure and explore different aspects loosely related to tenure. My name is An Li, a Chinese historian, works at the University of Texas at Dallas. Today, I am joined by Dr. Dan Du. Dr. Du is an assistant professor of history at the University of North Carolina and Charlotte. She received her PhD from the University of Georgia in 2017. Her first book, titled This World in a Teacup, Credits, Taste, and Power in the U.S.-China Tea Trade, 1784 to 1911, will be published by the University of Nebraska Press in spring 2026. Her research on tea has been funded by a dozen fellowships, such as the National Endowment for the Humanities and the Massachusetts Historical Society. Dan is the first guest we talk with outside of UT Dallas. It is fun to compare notes about tenure requirements at different institutions, the number of external reviewers for the tenure case, and the specific number of courses we are expected to develop. Resonating with other guests that we talk to, the most challenging aspect on the tenure track is to publish the first book. The unique aspect of Dan's experience is that a lot of us might think that publishing the first book is mostly about getting the writing done on our end. But according to Dan, publishing a book is highly uncertain, and many aspects are beyond our control. For example, switching hands among different editors, and it takes time to wait for several rounds of external reviews to come around. The way Dan described her daily life also stayed with me after the conversation. Teaching and writing during the day, and service and committee work in the evening. The job indeed takes a lot from us. I am not sure if I want to ask more questions about time management skills, because every one of us seem to have managed a lot, sometimes maybe too much in our life. If there is an opportunity, I would really like to spend some time to explore the physical and emotional health to not be burned out during the process. What keeps people going, facing some of the boredom and repetition of our work, and not to feel too much pressure and envy while looking around at each other. But first thing first, what is the tenure process across different institutions? What are the uncertainties in the writing and publishing process? And what are the time management skills proved to be effective? Let's listen in. Good morning. Welcome back to the podcast. Today, our guest is Dr. Dan Du. Dr. Dan Du is a Chinese historian. She works in a large public university in North Carolina, about 26,000 undergraduate students and 6,000 graduate students. Dr. Dan Du finished graduate school in 2017. Now, let's listen in about her experience about the tenure process. Good morning, Dan.
Morning, Anne.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And before we start, and as the routine process, please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Thank you for inviting me to this very interesting podcast. I'm Dan Du. I came from China. I came from China to the United States in 2009 to pursue the PhD program at the University of Georgia. My major was U.S. history with a special concentration on capitalism studies, but my dissertation and my current research focuses on the economic and cultural interactions between China and the United States. So I'm teaching Chinese history at UNC Charlotte. So far I have designed six new courses. The first two focus on a little more broader context of Chinese or Asian history, like modern East Asia, the history of the Silk Road. And then in the next several years, I just zoom in on China itself. So now I'm teaching classes on material culture of China, Chinese food, US-China trade, and also capitalism in China or economic history of China. This is basically like the most basic information about me. So,
So you came to the United States in 2009, and then you started job in 2017. So may I ask, is UNC Charlotte the first job outside of graduate school?
No, it's not. I graduated from UGA, the University of Georgia, in 2017. After that, I went to Wake Forest University. I found a job there as a visiting assistant professor for 1 year. So after that, in 2018, I came to UNC Charlotte as an assistant professor.
Great. So since 2018, so this year is 2025, the spring of 2025.
Yeah.
So where are you in terms of the tenure process? It is a tenure track job, right?
Yeah, it is a tiny check job. Thank God. Yeah, so now I just received all the reports from our dean, our chair, CHES, I mean our college and the department review committee. So now I think my profile is with the provost and vice chancellor. So we are waiting for the final decision.
So you submitted the tenure profile in fall 2024, so last year, and then
Exactly.
passed the department review, and then now it is in the hands of the provost and passed the deans, and then now it's in the provost is making decision. And when are you gonna get the when you're gonna get the official decision?
I think before summer, usually in April, May. So based upon the past experience, I think
It is a long review process indeed, and but
it
congratulations. It is a very, very long journey. And
Thank
since
you.
2018, and this is your 6th year, right?
Yeah, from
So
2018.
it's a standard 6 years, and then plus 1 year VAP experience.
Right. Yeah.
So it sounds like you are in an R1, a public R1 institution in North Carolina. So I'm just curious about to introduce like the requirements for tenure to the different audience. So, what are the requirements for tenure at your current institution?
Yeah, so that we had a very trans we have a very transparent policy about tenure promotion. So the most important requirements are research, teaching, and service. Maybe this is a standard for most universities. So for research, we are expected to publish two journal articles, or officially one, but usually my colleagues and I usually we publish two journal articles or book chapters before they book contract. And then the most important step, of course, is to have the final publishing contract due before our profile was submitted to the university. So we don't have to have the physical copy of the book. So the final publishing contract is the most important one. And then about teaching, we are supposed to design six new courses, including the courses if we taught before, including the courses we taught before coming to UNC Charlotte. Of course, the last course could be like a new course that you are designing. But I taught six courses before this, and a service usually for our department, actually the senior colleagues usually protect us from university service. So we are supposed to do some committee work at the department, and if we can reach out to the profession and the community, that would be great. So three criteria: research, teaching, and service.
But for the research, it's to publish articles, but the doesn't have to be in the production period. But as long as you have a solid contract, it is fine. It sounds very interesting that it is required to design six new courses. So a very specific number, my point is
Yeah.
very, very specific number. So in terms of the review process, I'm just curious about like what is the package? Because for my current institution, teaching, of course, it is evaluation, student evaluation, and peer evaluation. For research, It is different from my peers' institution because I worked in a small liberal art before and now it's an R1. And I feel like for the R1 institution, it's more vigorous because we are allowed to select up to five representative scholarship. And then for the external letters, and then I got 14. It required from 6 to 12. But in my peers' institution, a small liberal arts, and I believe I only got four, not from peer institutions. So I'm just curious about like, what about your package? And then I think service is pretty standard, right? And then what about like for research? Like how many external letters, and then how do you put the research portfolio together?
Yeah, so it's very interesting to hear your experience at two different universities. For us, I feel like the process was a little easier. I think we need three final external reviewers evaluations, but in the process, I think the chair needs to contact 4 to 6 external reviewers. I remember actually I came up with a long list of possible peer reviewers for my chair, and then our department review committee they came up with a long list. So from this, maybe I believe we should have a dozen of external reviewers, and then the chair selected maybe the best ones for my position. So she may contact it, I think at least 6 of them. And then fortunately, we got all the letters back on time. So I think maybe 3 is enough, but more is a little better. So yeah, like you said, the external reviewers' letters are a key component of the package for research, and also all of my like publications before this process. I mean, like the book contract, the manuscript, the articles. Yeah, I think, and also the grants I applied for, all of these are important components of the package, and also the conferences and invited talks.
So in terms of teaching, besides student evaluations, what about peer observations? And how many peer observations like did you have during the 6 years process? For me, for my last institution, because it's very teaching focused, I got observed every semester. But in my current institution, and it is a 2-2 low, it is a research university, and what I heard was you got observed only during 3rd year review and the review year during tenure. How about you?
Yeah, for us a little similar, but a little like it's a kind of like a combination of both, I guess. I got 4 peer review observation reports in the past 6 years, maybe 2 before my like a reappointment, 2 after it. I'm not sure how the pandemic interrupted everything, but we got 4. And for the teaching, like you said, students' evaluation was also included, but that's not like the most important component because the department understands some students may like they just understand maybe some possible issues with it, but still, student evaluations are important. And also, the university created a report, kind of like a statistical analysis of our research, like the overall rating and the rate of pass and fail in the class and the students' qualitative evaluations. That's one important part. So we can use the information in the tenure promotion process for the profile. And peer reviews, like you said, they are key components as well. So our chair and the review committees, usually they look at our peers' evaluation, especially the pedagogy and the atmosphere at the classroom to evaluate our teaching. And also, plus, in addition to these two components, we also report like how many students, honor students, graduate students we advised in the past several years. And also, if we published some articles on teaching, or if we had some, we were awarded some teaching grants in the past, all of these can be the components going to the portfolio.
So it sounds like it's a combination of peer review, student evaluation, and also statistic analysis. So you mentioned a lot of your achievements, including like advising graduate students and some grants. So let's brag about them. So now we have the criteria, the requirements of the school for teaching, research, and service. And then, so what have you accomplished? in these three areas?
Thank you for asking. It's like a rewriting the personal statement.
Totally.
I think maybe my accomplishments or what I have been doing is similar to many juniors, faculty. So the most important accomplishment, if we can say that, is the book. Of course, all of us spent more than 10 years on it. So I just finished the manuscript, which focuses on the US-China tea trade in the 19th century. So I'm very happy with this. Well, this book, I can talk a little more about it because I think that's my major kind of achievement. So it focuses on actually the consumption aspect of tea in the United States and the financial history of tea in China. So usually when people talk about the tea trade, people focus on Britain, but this is the first book length study of the US China tea trade, especially how Americans dominated green and oolong tea consumption and invented English breakfast tea, and the credit economy in China reshaped or shaped and reshaped the trade and consumption aspects of tea. So yeah, this is of course for most of people the major achievement. By doing that, I also found more interesting topics which I will continue to explore in the future, like US tea consumption per se, and also Chinese credit economy. Usually, when people talk about Chinese economy, they just talk about China as a silver economy, but they downplay or they didn't pay much attention to the credit aspect. So I will continue to do that. So these are the major kind of like events about my research and about teaching. I'm very excited about teaching Chinese history. Actually, like I mentioned at the beginning, I was majored in US history, so I never thought about teaching Chinese history. But I'm very happy this position gave me this opportunity to teach Chinese history and culture while doing research on US, actually both US and the Chinese perspectives or history. So also I found many students at UNC Charlotte, they are different from maybe some students at other universities because of their they had to work a lot while doing research, while writing their papers. So I feel worried. I can feel a sense of accomplishments when some students really made progress in my classes, and some of them are truly interested in Chinese history and culture, although this culture may be not so relevant with their personal lives. This is about teaching and about service. It's very basic, like some university committees, but I feel a sense of accomplishment after I can cooperate with my colleagues a little better. And especially now, I'm serving on the board of the Chinese Historians in the United States, this professional organization. I feel this gives me lots of sense of accomplishments after seeing so many well-established Chinese historians or historians who are doing Chinese history in the United States.
You're definitely very active and involved in CHUS, the Chinese Historian of the United States. I'm very impressed with your work. And then it sounds like in UNT Charlotte, and probably compared to a small liberal art, and you get to teach a variety of like traditional and non-traditional students. Just want to clarify about the book. So two articles is the requirement and also the book contract. So who is the lucky publisher of your book?
I feel lucky. I got it published with the University of Nebraska Press. So, yeah.
Congratulations, like
Thank
that's
you.
really wonderful achievement. But the production can be as intense, like coming up. Yeah, and it takes a while. Okay, so wonderful. So very wonderful achievements of teaching, research, and service. So can we move on a little bit and talk about, so this is the work, but sometimes how to get the work done, it's very, very mysterious to a lot of people. So what kind of support you got from your institutions in terms of like research fund, conference travel fund, or pretend your sabbatical, course release, or teaching research assistant, external funding. So let's talk about how do you get the work done with all the institutional supports?
Yeah, so that's very important. And actually, one of the most appealing feature of the job at UNC Charlotte is the support here. We don't have the startup funding, but we got when I came here, I got some funding to buy books, which I really need. And the most important one is the leave. So we have a junior leave before, I think after my reappointment. That was like you can have a full payment for half a year or half payment for a full year. But I got another fellowship, an NEH and MH, Massachusetts Historical Society Fellowship. So I combined them plus another grant from our university. So I can have the full payment for the full year. This was super helpful for so for the whole year. I didn't have to teach. I can just focus on research and writing. So that's very, very helpful. So the leave, the time and support. And also for us, we have, I think in the past 6, 7 years, every year we got 3 travel funding for conference presentations. This was very important for us. Like everyone else, like we have to know the cutting edge research in our fields. So all of these support are very important.
It is indeed very important compared to money, time. Like it's more important for researcher to get to write. So may I ask a follow-up questions about how many conferences like do you usually get to go to with the institutional support?
Yeah, usually 3 because these are the 3 opportunities. Usually 3 large ones that I have to travel a lot. But we have some regional conferences as well, like Chapel Hill. Usually they have like a conference at the end of the year. I can just drive there, and we have a SUSFLIC network for scholars in Southeast United States. Usually they provide some funding to us, so. Yeah, usually just 3 to 5.
3 to 5. That's a very impressive number. It's
yeah.
That you are not only active, but you are very good at looking for fundings, like to go to different opportunities and then to network and then to listen to edge cutting research, like you said. So indeed, the tenure process is like involve a standard requirement. As you said, but everyone's experience is unique. So now let's move on and try to reflect on the whole tenure process. So for you, it's from 2018 to 2025, so 6, 7 years, and then half of it is during the pandemic. So what do you say were the most challenging aspects of this 6, 7 years for you?
Yeah, thank you for asking. Actually, this is a very good time to reflect on that. So I think the most challenging thing is the book publication process. So the policy for us to get tenure is very transparent at the very beginning of my work here. So my major goal was to get the book published, but maybe like many people's experience, many scholars' experience, this process is something that we cannot control. So I experienced almost all of the challenges that some people can face in this process, like the editors, like at the beginning, some editors contacted me even during my when I wrote the dissertation about this project, but later they just stopped responding like that. And then after I contacted some editors, unfortunately, some editors were just retired in our field. And well, they contacted the new editors. Well, they are not interested in this book anymore. And even after my book, I worked with 2 publishers, especially for the first one. The editor was super helpful. And the editor provided me with lots of advice on how to revise it into a very good book. But the editor the editor was retired after they sent out my manuscript to the external reviewers. Well, there was a gap period between the old and the new hired editor. Well, in the process, well, I got a report very quickly back in 2 months, but the other one, it took 7 months for me to get it. So, well, I believe the new editor, the newly hired editor, was thinking of helping, but she was new, and it seems like the new editor was not so interested in my book as the retired editor. So that was challenging. That was why I kind of negotiated with the first publisher, but without any maybe a possibility to look for another peer reviewer. Well, we were still waiting for the second report. I talked with my editor now. This editor, she's super supportive, and this process went a little better than the first one, just because the reviews came back on time, and then I did some revision in the process, and then we went through another round of peer review, but that was very fast. So just the whole process was a little frustrating, although now I can talk about it very calmly, and it seems like a very normal process. But in the process, you just after you received some rejections from some editors who are not interested in it, and later the same press or the editor from the same press contacted me expressing interest in this book. So anyway, and also maybe some just sometimes no responses at all, or sometimes some editors are super helpful, but they are not doing that job anymore. So all of these are very frustrating. And also the conflicting reports from the external reviewers. One just kind of critiqued some aspects of the manuscript, while the other one thought these aspects actually are the strength of this manuscript. So all of these details, maybe because we are first-time writers, so it was challenging, especially because the manuscript, the final contract determine will deter would determine whether I can keep doing my job or whether I need to look for another job. So just the unexpected consequences, and also the long process was the most challenging thing.
So it sounds like not only is a very long process, but it is a process that many of the aspects beyond our control, and lots of
Exactly.
moving hands like of the editors, and that makes it very uncertain and very frustrating. So may I ask you, when did you start contacting the editor? You started the job in 2018. So when did you start the process? And you finally got the contract in 2020,
24.
24. So when did you start this whole process?
Right. Yeah, that's a very good question. I think the process started in 2017 or even 2016 when I was writing the dissertation. I didn't start it. A editor from a very prominent publisher contacted me about the dissertation. So they are very interested in the topic. So back to that time, I was a graduate student. I didn't know what I need to do. So I think I should have talked more with the editor about the project, but I didn't. I just occasionally kept some email correspondence with the editor. So they were still interested in it. But they like the real process started shoot from let's see 2023 2022 like that like some 1 or 2 years before I submitted my manuscript. I contacted several editors who I'm interested in or whom my like colleagues suggested to me. So this is the process, and the most important contact I think I made was at AHA. So while we presented some papers at AHA, some editors, if they are interested in our topics, they came to talk with us. I think that was the most helpful process. That should be in 2022, 2023, I talked with several editors at AHA, including my current editor, Bridget at the University of Nebraska Press. So this is, yeah, a long process.
That is, if you started a real process in 2023 and 2022, and you got the contract in 2024, it's actually relatively very fast, like
really.
Very, very efficient. So if it sounds like the book, publishing the book is the most challenging aspect in terms of the tenure process, because it's so uncertain and so long and beyond our control. So what would be the advice you give to people that who thinking about going into a tenure track job or just start a tenure track job?
Right. Yeah. So I have been thinking about this as well. So if I could redo it, maybe I would start first, talk with the editors much earlier. I tended to wait until I have a very mature project ready to present to the editors. But now I understand, like, the editors understand your project, your research would change in the future, right? That's the normal research and writing process. So nowadays, I see some like a PhD students, ABDs, they started talking with the editors about their projects. Or if they won't sign advanced contracts, at least they know like the expectations of the editors. So my suggestion is to start this process as early as possible. Even when you are writing the dissertation, don't be intimidated by the process. And I feel most editors, they are very supportive, very helpful. They provide very constructive feedback on the project. So don't just feel they will judge you, just talk with them. And like my project, I'm doing research. I was doing research on both the consumption and the financial aspects of the tea trade, but I chose to focus on the financial aspect. Actually, this is a harder, more difficult job task for the editors to advertise this book. I guess most people would be more interested in the consumption aspect. So if I talked with the editors a little earlier, maybe I would do my first book a little differently. But I didn't know. I was just solely focusing on what I am interested in. But I forgot there is a market for this book. And second, I want to say, if you can try to give yourself more time to prepare for this process, I don't mean you need to finish the book as early as possible, because it's a constantly changing process. But everyone needs to understand that there are so many challenges that we as authors and the editors and even the peer reviewers, they couldn't control, like time, like what happened in their lives, right? So my senior colleague told me, like, you need to give yourself at least 6 months extra time in case something goes wrong with the first publisher. You will have time to make some changes. I didn't understand this. I thought it would be a very smooth and very quick process, like we publish journal articles, but actually that's not. So give yourself more time. I think these are the most important advice I can provide.
Fantastic. So allow yourself more time. But accommodate any uncertainties, and also getting the publisher and the editors involved earlier. And so keeping a marketing mindset, right? Even from the very beginning, because you are selling something, right?
Yeah.
So talking about time, we all want to spend more time. However, we only have that much time during the day. And then you talk about there are three criteria. You are very involved in choose the Chinese historian of the United States. You also need to design 6 courses, and then to feel rewarding to teach your students, and also publish the very uncertain book, right? So how do you balance so many different things, especially research and teaching, right? Like these two things, like they're all competing, they all require you a lot of time. So what specific strategies that work for you to balance, especially writing and teaching?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know whether I'm able to really manage that or balance teaching and writing and sometimes the service. I just want to say, maybe chunk out your time based upon your work habit. Like me, I'm a morning person, so usually I do most of the research in the morning. If I can, I try to get up early. Before I have breakfast, I started doing some research on the new project, and then after breakfast, I will do some writing, some maybe work on the not old research, but the research I have been doing, like the citations or revise some paragraphs. And then in the afternoon, usually I focus on teaching, like reading assignments or grade some students' papers or write the lectures. And in the evening, usually at night before I really take a break, go to sleep, I usually focus on the service part, because that doesn't require you to do much thinking while you're doing the service part. And I actually, Dr. Li, I remember what you said when you gave us the talk at the workshop about how to manage time. Like you said, you use the time between classes to do the citations. That's what I found very useful as well. And also you mentioned start writing and researching in the morning, because your brain will start process the information for the whole day. I found that's the same here as well. So just to start the research in the morning, and then throughout the day, maybe your body, your brain continue processing the information.
We definitely have different energy levels during the day. It's called like A
definitely.
energy and C energy. But I'm just very impressed that you can still do service work at night. Yeah, that's very impressive. It seems like it's just putting more time. It's really not so much balance. It really takes a lot from you. So in terms of like time management, and that is, of course, it's all up to you. But what about the institution? So what are the things that you think the institution could possibly do better or do differently to help you with this process?
Yeah, that's a very important question. I think, of course, if they could give us more time, that'll be fantastic, right? For us, like for junior faculty members, like I mentioned, we don't have to do the service beyond the department level. I think that's super helpful, especially because we are still navigating the new environment. And also this junior leave was very helpful. So our teaching load is 2-2. So I think maybe it's very hard for our institution to give us a course release, but if they can, that'll be super helpful. But I think the most important support, if they can, just to give us more time, and maybe reduce the service part a little bit. So, and also in the past several years, we had to advise many students. That's very time-consuming work. But now we have a professional advisor who will advise all of the students. So that gave us a little more time. I really hoped we started doing this a little earlier, but that's not something we, like the university or the department, could control either. So, yeah.
That's a very great idea to have a specialized advising team for you to do the work that you are trained for, right? The best
Exactly.
Time. It will be nice to have a course release maybe for the production period of the book, or maybe like when you are very, very close, and give you one course release to just really finish it.
Yeah.
So this is about the institutional support, and then also your reflection about the tenure process. And then I'm also curious about the job market question. Just the question is that, out of curiosity for myself, and also many of our audience are graduate students, and also like on the tenure track as well. So it sounds like the current job is your second job, right? You were on the job market twice. The first time is Wake Forest, and the second time is UNC Charlotte. So you have been in North Carolina for a while. So if you don't mind me asking, I know for some people this is a very sensitive question, but since you're already getting tenure, so have you been on the job market since you started the current job?
Yeah, it's a very good question for me. It's not sensitive at all. So I just I think I started the job market before this current job. Like I mentioned, I got the job visiting assistant professorship at Wake Forest University right after or before I graduated from UGA. And then while I was teaching there, I got the job interview opportunity with UNC Charlotte. So that's the only experience that I have with the job market. So before coming to UNC Charlotte.
So you are on the job market twice.
Twice, yeah, one for Wake
One for
Forest,
Wake Forest.
yeah, one for
Is Wake
UNC
Forest
Charlotte.
a 1 year position or is already it's a 1 year position?
Yeah.
How do you feel? So for the current graduate student who are also listening to the episode, how do you feel about these 2 times on the job market? Like what are the experiences like of your what are the difference of your experiences?
Yeah. So I think for me and for many people, the experience was very intimidating, especially when we walked out of the graduate school. We had to start looking for professional or for jobs. That was very hard. But the second time, I felt I was more prepared than the first time. Well, I still remember how hard it was the first time when I was on the job market. It was so overwhelming. I mean, emotionally, when I received so many rejection emails, I thought like we have done so much, right? So the job market should be not so challenging, but you just find out there were so many competitors, so many well-established, accomplished candidates there. Especially, feel like for the first time, I didn't really know how to write the application materials. Maybe my like a letter of interest was several pages long. Sometimes I don't know how to talk about the significance of my research. I didn't know how to highlight that. So going through the first round of job search was super helpful. Actually, after I received so many rejection emails, I started to face the reality. I started to ask my friends to proofread my application materials. Actually, that was super helpful. Even though my friends, like my best friend, and she's also my roommate, she's not a history major, but she can spot the significance of my research very quickly. And she told me, like, your CV is not detailed enough, but your letter of interest is too long, like that. And after I started working at Wake Forest University, I was very lucky to have several very supportive colleagues there. Although my position was only 1 year, but they really treated me as a dear colleague, like a Dr. Ching Zhang, two other professors there. They told me actually sometimes they read my application materials and they could tell me what is the big picture here. You should highlight in your application materials because they were on the job market for many times and they hired many people. And also like the whole department at Wake Forest University even held a mock interview for me. So I just gave them the job talk, and many faculty there helped me like improve it, including how to design your PowerPoints like that. I feel that's very, very helpful. The supportive colleagues can tell you their experiences and then how to make improvements. So the second time when I was on the job market, when I had the job interview with UNC Charlotte, I felt I was more prepared. I know how long my letter of interest should be. And UNC Charlotte actually is a very friendly institution as well because they didn't ask us for many application materials, only like the writing sample, maybe something about your research besides the letter of interest. So I know how to showcase my research and in the job talk as well, because I practiced so much with my colleagues at Wake Forest University and with my friends. So I just feel it's okay if many of the graduate students feel very frustrated about the job search process, so many rejection letters, so many uncertainties, and maybe nowadays more postdoc positions than teaching positions. It's totally fine. Just I know it's easier to say, but I just want to tell everyone, just take it easy and try to learn something from every process and try to talk to the supportive colleagues and friends in the process. Well, after each step, you will be doing better and better. Finally, eventually, I think everyone, as long as we work hard enough, we can get a job, very good job.
So to have some short-term positions like postdoc or VIP just to build up the credential, right? To prove
Exactly.
hireable and for a tenure track job. So we are historians, and then I know you work with a lot of numbers, so we love statistics. So to give an idea about the job market, a very tough job market to the audience. So in our job about Chinese history, I remember I started to apply in 2015, and at that time there were like 30 to 40 jobs. That is about the same. Now it's shrinking like every year. And then, of course, we apply for all of them. So, do you still remember in 2017 and how many first round interviews did you get? And second round, and then finally got the Wake Forest offer?
No, I for each round I just got one. So Wake Forest, I got one like a phone interview with Wake Forest, and then I got this job. That was the only opportunity I had on one for the first round of job search. For the second round, actually, the job at UNC Charlotte was the first one and the first on-campus interview, and then I got the offer. After that, I remember maybe two opportunities, but I just turned them down. I was not in the lucky ones who could get like a bunch of opportunities and offers to choose from. I was not, so.
But you are also how can I articulate this? You have a very strong heart because you get one and then you just move that one to the next round and eventually get the offer, right? That is the only one. So I can't imagine how much pressure you might be feeling at that time, right? That's very amazing. And then also I can imagine after getting a 2-2 job, and then it might be, and also in North Carolina, a wonderful place to live. And even if you look around in the job market, there might not be many jobs that top this one. So I think it's very reasonable, like, for you to stay and now rooted, and congratulations.
Thank
Hey,
you.
so after getting the tenure, it's a big achievement. So you are getting it soon, probably before the summer. So what next?
Yeah, so I should ask myself that question more times. I don't know. I mean, for me, I don't feel like getting the tenure is like a big rupture in my life. Like my chair told me, celebrate. Now you got all the positive reports from us, so you need to celebrate it. I even didn't celebrate it. I just feel now this means I have a little more freedom to do what I want to do. So this is what I'm feeling now. So next, I hope I will have more time to do the projects that I have been interested in for a long time, like tea consumption, like some credit instruments. Because after getting the tenure, we don't have to think about like kind of like a bomb. It will explode if you don't do something. So I think I have a little more time, so I want to publish more before getting tenure. The advice for us is to publish these two articles as soon as possible, and then focus on the book. Don't think about publication anymore. So now I can do more. I can write more about the topics I'm truly interested in while still doing research on the second book. So I feel this is one thing that I feel a little more liberated about doing research, more flexibility after getting tenure. But it doesn't mean like life will be much easier. I think that's not true. It will never be true, actually. And for teaching and service, I think still the same. Getting tenure won't affect teaching that much. But since I have been teaching for many years, maybe not many years compared with the senior colleagues, for several years, now I know a little better about how to make the class more entertaining, while also in the meantime can help students learn more, like more in-class activities. I can do that because I know the materials a little better. Well, for service, maybe that means more service, more opportunities to serve, but in the meantime, have heavier responsibilities as well.
So it sounds like more books and more open classroom, and then probably organizing more conferences like the one
I
just had
hope so.
right?
Yeah, I
So
hope
really,
so.
really look forward to that. So it sounds like having tenure doesn't really change the way that you organize your life in those three categories. And then probably just maybe under a little bit less pressure. As you said, there was no taking bumps anymore.
Yeah.
It's really, really fun to talk with you, and thank you so much for sharing that. And congratulations again.
Thank
Before
you.
we end the conversation, what other things would you like us to know about you?
I think actually I almost covered everything. Like for me, work is the most important part. So I just hope everyone understands like that process. And I'm just a historian who's doing translational research. That's it. And my book will come out very soon in spring 2026 if people are interested in financial history and tea and US-China trading relations, maybe they want to check it out. So that's the only thing I want to talk about myself. But thank you so much for this opportunity.
Spring 2026 by University of Nebraska. So thank you so much, Dan, and thank you so much for your time, sharing your very, very precious experience in a lot of details. And then hope to talk to you again very soon.
Thank you. I hope so.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode of Tenure, a Game Manual, make sure to check out our other episodes. Or, if you can't get enough of us, follow us on social media at Tenure, a Game Manual. This episode was produced by Sebastian Bancesco. Our executive producer and host is Dr. An Li, and today's guest was Dr. Dan Du. Sebastian Bancesco is also our editor, and we're generously sponsored by the Dean of the Bass School of Arts, Humanities, and Technology, the Provost Teaching Fellow Program, and the AXH Grant. Thanks for listening. We've now reached our special segment where we ask everyday students, what's your favorite memory or experience with one of your professors? Today, we hear from Maham, a UT Dallas alumni.
I have so many favorite professors and moments with professors, so this was a little hard to choose. But I think the best environment that a professor has created in a class was most definitely my Japanese professor at UTD, Nami sensei, Nami Kuroska. And it was such a cute environment because she had us all sit on circular tables, kind of like kindergarten. It was so cute. And she was just the sweetest teacher ever. She would bring lots of treats, and she made learning Japanese so fun. She would very often bring over people from the JET program or other ALT programs or assistant language teacher programs from Japan to speak to us about opportunities outside of the class. And I really liked how she would have us do, like, not just do Japanese writing and reading, we would actually write our own scripts and perform plays. So that was a really fun experience. I really liked how Nami Sensei united the class, and it was just a really good experience in her class. So I think that's what I wanted to remember from my favorite moments with the professor.